Hey, Being at Work listeners, welcome back to another empowering episode. This is your host, Andrea Butcher, and I'm looking for the right words to convey my gratitude for this show and the depth of the conversations. I know that this conversation today is going to resonate because you are a leader and you work really hard, and no doubt you want to be seen and valued. And I suspect you spend a lot of time focusing on the wants and needs of others. But are you taking the time to check in with yourself? Do you know what you want and need? Today's guest had a pivotal season in 2011 that led her to recognize how important it is to align everything in her life with her values. And as a result, she asks herself today, what works for me and my life? I love that question. Julie Brockensteady is the Executive Vice President, Head of HR for Acumen Pharmaceuticals. But what you really need to know about Julie is how she's learned that she is so much more than her work. Listen in as we talk about the grind and trying to prove yourself, the real impact of losing yourself in your work, and the value in taking time to identify where you get energy. Check it out.
Well, I started my career at Eli Lilly and Company as a sales representative in 2000. And I was in various sales roles for about 6 years, and was enlightened by my sales manager in terms of looking at what I might want to do next. And he brought up HR, and I was like, what? What do you mean? Like, I like my job in sales. What does HR do, you know? But he saw something in me, and he was the first male ally that I had in my life before we even talked about male allies. And so he saw something in me and said, I think you would be really good at HR. And so that took me in the path of moving to Indianapolis and pursuing my HR career and taking on some different roles. But as part of my HR career, I wanted to lead a team of people. And in the way in which HR was structured at that time with Lilly, there were some opportunities to lead larger teams, but maybe not as many when it came to how HR business partners were structured. And so I went out to be a sales manager as part of my HR development. So there's always a plan for me to come back to Indianapolis and pursue my HR career. But sales management at Lilly and in many places is the epitome of hands-on coaching. It's kind of different than being a leader in the corporate setting, you know, because you're interacting with healthcare professionals and you're having to provide on the spot coaching and counseling throughout the time that you spend with your sales rep. So I was pretty excited about that and really gave that job my all and probably too much of me, which is really the first pivotal moment, Andrea, that, you know, we kind of discovered in my career that changed me. And what happened was this, I had a team of 14 wonderful sales representatives, and I do not have children, and I kind of felt like they were part of my family. I pushed myself to be out in the field as much as possible. I was constantly thinking about and worrying them. Remember, this is my first job managing people. And I let myself go way into my work, and I got really sick. And I was having different medical issues, seeing different doctors, and kind of start getting scared. At one point, I told my sister, you know, these are the doctors I'm seeing. They don't really know exactly what's going on with me, you know. And it was kind of a weird thing to say to her. And that's when my sister, Jody, you know, sat me down and she's like, you know, we're really worried about you, Julie. Like, you need to remember that you are so much more than being a great employee at Lilly. You know, you are so much more than your job, and you have so much more to offer. And we don't want you to miss out on that part of your life. And I'll never forget that conversation with her. And it still resonates with me, and something I actually talk to other people about that are going through some of the burnout or the imbalance of work and life that I experienced, you know, 10 years into my career.
So much there to unpack. I could feel it when you said, I let myself go. You were pouring so much into your team, into this new role. Did you recognize the signs leading up to getting sick? And how did you navigate that?
I did because I wasn't turning it off. So I would go out in the field and spend time with my sales reps and customers, and then I'd come home and do work all night. I mean, there was some administrative work that was tied to being a sales manager, call notes, those kind of things. But I didn't give myself a lot of grace to say, hey, maybe I should cut out a little early or meet a little later. Some days I did that, but probably not enough. Maybe I don't need to spend this many days in the field because it doesn't allow me to think and catch up on the other aspects of being a sales manager. And I was kind of work obsessed. You know, I hadn't been in sales for a few years. I was trying to prove myself as a sales manager in a new disease state, different than the one I started in. And, you know, I loved my team so much. And, you know, I just poured into it to a point that, you know, obviously caused some significant issues for me personally.
Yeah, you neglected yourself. You compromised yourself. And I suspect because you were putting so much into it, you were probably being rewarded. I mean, the organization was probably grateful for all of the effort and hard work.
Yeah, I was checking boxes of my field, you know, the time in the field and, you know, my call notes. And, you know, I was, you know, building relationships with my team members, right? You know, I was checking the boxes that I thought needed to be checked, you know, when I'm still learning how to be a sales manager and not having enough experience to kind of realize when I could pull back.
Yeah, the organization may have thought like, Julie is killing it, but here you are killing yourself in the process. What about your leader? Was there any recognition of that? Like that you were out of balance, and did anybody notice that? Was it an environment where you felt comfortable like raising the flag and saying, hey, I'm starting to struggle here?
That's an interesting question. You know, during that 2+ year period as a sales manager, I had three different managers myself, or sales directors, as Lily called them at the time. But at the time where, you know, I really got sick, I mean, my manager, that sales director, she was very, very supportive of me, but probably didn't know how burnt out I was until it came to a head. And I actually did need to take a medical leave because the doctors are like, and I won't go into all the different medical issues I had, but I needed to pause. And I was supported for that. But, there are company cultures where, you know, working hard and doing all those things is just kind of how things go. And that's probably where I was at that time. And so I was the one that kind of had to kind of say, I'm not well, and was, you know, grateful to be supported on the back end. But I don't necessarily think that maybe everybody knew how bad it was, because I would try to, you know, put on the happy face and keep plugging away.
Well, and it was 13 years ago. It was pre-pandemic. I mean, I do hope that the wellness conversation is more prevalent in organizations today. I mean, I see that. I have to think that. And yet, I do know that we continue to compromise ourselves. We continue to neglect our wellness. So what's the message as you talk about this story with other leaders? What's the core message, and what can we learn from this story?
I think that I have learned that my, you know, work is important. You know, obviously we need to work to pay the bills. And there's probably an aspect of some of us, and maybe in particular females, that take their work home with them. They take it, you know, they can take things maybe a bit more personally and carry that additional weight. So it's kind of hard to separate the two sometimes, I think, for us. But you have to set those boundaries because nobody else will set them for you. And as you mentioned earlier, and I shared with you before, Andrea, is, you know, work-life balance to me is kind of an interesting term to talk about now, because so many people work from home now, or at least for portions of their days. And so those lines are really blurred. So I like to think about my life, my work, whatever I'm involved in, is focusing on what aligns with my values and how I want to live my life every day and what works for me, what works for my day, you know, to get work done. Sometimes I, you know, want to have, you know, flexibility and do some work during the day, and then I come back to it at night. And I think that companies, to your point, are much more open about how work gets done post-COVID. And I think that's great. So, you know, the message is, I would say, for especially for people earlier on in their career, is really try to think about what is important to you with your life before you think about what's important with work, because work will always be there. It's like that old saying my dad always would say, if you need something done, go find a busy person, you know, a capable person. You're just going to keep getting the work if you don't say no. And sometimes it's just okay to say no and not have to explain it, you know?
Well, I love it so much. I love the question, what works for me and my life? I mean, think about if we enter the workforce with that mindset. Because in 2011, I mean, like you said, you were trying to prove yourself in this new role. You were not thinking about yourself. You were thinking about being successful in the role and doing whatever it took.
And how others perceived me.
Exactly. Were you meeting their expectations, not your own? That question really forces us to pause and think about, what do I need? What do I want? I think that's a big part of the challenge, is we don't often know. We're trying to find it in something external versus taking the time to pause and really think about for ourselves, what works for me in my life? What do I want? What do I need? What feels good to me?
And yeah, and why does our head go sometimes to my job and that, you know, being our identity?
Yeah, any other identity besides self identity. That is huge. Taking the time to really think about what works for me in my life, because then you're in a position to set boundaries around that, aren't you? It's hard to set boundaries when you don't know what you want or need.
Yes, and that kind of leads to kind of a second pivotal moment, which is, you know, 2021, 10 years after the one we just discussed.
You've got these 10-year patterns.
I guess. So
here we go.
Connected.
I know, 2031.
Hopefully it's a good one.
Uh-huh. Coming up for you. You'll be walking around a little more cautious in 2031.
It's about to happen. Now look at me now. I got this all figured out. So in 2021, I was kind of going through some transition within my work. I was working at Roche at the time, which was, the second company I worked for after working for Lilly for almost 18 years. And it was a really great experience overall. But I was kind of getting back into that burnout thing again, where I was working hours that were kind of crazy. I actually had a global job. So sometimes I'd start with Europe at 7 a.m. and end with Australia at 7 p.m. And Roche was going through a lot of organizational change at that time. And the business I supported as well as within HR, which later became people and culture. And so change after change. Some of that resulted in workforce reductions and just changes in the way that we did business and how we provided value as HR colleagues. And I found myself in a position of not knowing if I was going to fit in at Roche in terms of a position, the direction that they were going. And that was tough for me because, you know, I really respected the experience and the support that I got while I was there. But I was burnt out again. And I think a lot of people were at that time. I mean, that was 1 year into COVID, and it took a toll on, I think, probably almost everybody in some shape or form. So I had an opportunity to stay at Roche in a role or to take a severance package because my role was being made redundant. And I would have said probably 5 years ago, I never would have taken the severance package. I would have taken the job for fear of not finding another job or fact that, you know, Roche is a great, safe, stable company, you know. But I felt a little bit differently after just more reflection and saying, you know what, I've made the move once from Lilly to Roche or Lilly Elanco to Roche. I can do it again. And I think I know in the back of my mind, I needed a break. I needed a break. I needed a timeout. And Roche was, you know, really, really good to me and their employees in terms of how they supported them through those career transitions. And, you know, so I was able to take basically 3 months of time to think about what I wanted to do and think about what else could be out there for Julie. And it was great. I had to push myself not to go right into job searching mode and actually just decompress. And I had the voice of my sisters again in my head. This time my younger sister Jill was like, could you please just take August and not do anything? Like, stop talking to headhunters or any, you know, just chill, which is, you know, actually something that she's doing right now in her career where she's taking a pause. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, Andrea, like that the view of taking a break now is viewed differently than it was before. It's great. And I don't think I even knew it at the time. I just knew I needed to do it. And a lot of people did. And I think they were probably better off for it because I took that time. I explored different opportunities. I ended up in a wonderful role that probably made me the least comfortable, the one I'm in now, being a head of HR at a small company versus, you know, the roles I was used to at larger companies in HR. But I knew it would come with learning and growth. And I think taking that time off, and I've noticed it with others, is like, I'm better for it and the company's better for it because they get a more refreshed Julie than going, you know, back to back to roles, which is sometimes what we tend to do. Like, oh, we'll take a little time. The company's like, oh, no, we really need you. Or, oh, you don't start for 3 more weeks, but we want to do some introduction calls and those time. I mean, that's how it goes. And you never get that time back. So I, you know, wish I would have had more time than 3 months, but I am grateful for that time that I had for me.
Well, and like you said, because you had had this 2011 experience, it really did set you up, didn't it, to recognize, like, here's another opportunity for me to really check in with what works for me in my life. It also, the other thing that I find so interesting, we were talking about this like 10-year pattern, we kind of laughed about that, but isn't it interesting that once again, you found yourself in a kind of a burnout mode? As you think about that, I mean, that also has to be a lesson, doesn't it? Like staying connected to what you need and what you want, because it is easy to get wrapped up into, you have a servant heart, you work hard, you care a lot. How do you regularly check in with what do I need and want for my life?
I'm fortunate to have a wonderful family, 4 beautiful, amazing sisters that are, you know, my best friends. And so,
and are you all J's?
We
so
are.
You talked about Jodi, Jill. Obviously, we have Julie. Who are the
and
others?
And Gina, spelled with a J. She's named after my mom, Jean.
Oh,
I know. And aren't we cute?
We're dorkies. So oh, I love them so much.
So my family, my close friends, and my significant other, Aaron, are really good checkpoints for me. I mean, sometimes that helps, you know, to have people that you really trust to kind of lean in, you know, talk to them about what's going on in your life. They are always checking in because they know that I, you know, tend to have work stress and those things. So that I do that. In terms of, I guess, self-checking in, as you asked, maybe, I'm committed to working out 2 weeks in a row or 2 nights in a row with a personal trainer. That's changed my life. I look forward to my workouts. I appreciate her. I formed a friendship with her, and I don't miss them. I don't miss those trainings, probably because I'm paying for them in some ways, but having a level of accountability. And I also try to start my mornings with a cup of coffee before I go right into work and start getting into my computer and actually just kind of think about what I want to accomplish for the day. I think I probably should kind of reintegrate meditation or some of the other tools that I've used in the past. I'm not doing those right now, but I am looking forward to spring weather and taking walks. That has always been wonderful for me. Sometimes listening to music or just sometimes listening to kind of what's around. So those are some of the things that I do, but I have to be mindful of it. And it's for some reason, 23 years in or 24 years into my career, I just feel like I'm better about the boundaries than I was. Probably just from my experience. I don't know. I block time on my calendar. So this is Julie time. There's no meetings. I just feel much more comfortable with making it work for me, you know, and not giving everything I have to my job. I will certainly give 100% and I love what I do, but it can't define me anymore, and it doesn't.
Well, and because of your 2011 experience, again, I mean, it was painful. It was hard on you. It took you out of the game that you love so much. So yeah, no doubt you're a little more attuned to what's happening and probably recognizing the signs of sickness or burnout or just not being well.
You know, I can tell when I'm tired. I can tell my face is breaking out. You know, I can tell when there's anxiety, you know, before I go to bed, thinking about the next day. So like it's easier for me to pick up on that and kind of try to find the right ways to mitigate that stress. And I'm just a little bit better about it than I was 10 years ago.
Yes. A message I've been, I was speaking with a group of emerging leaders and we were talking about like not feeling well, having anxiety. And one of them said like, well, but it's like, it's no big deal. Like if you look at the problems in the world, and I'm like, yes, but you lead from the essence of who you are. And if you are feeling shitty, that's a problem we're solving, because that feeling shitty is going to carry into everything you do and it's not going to serve you or anyone well. So honoring ourselves enough to take the time to get what we need, to be quiet, whatever that is. And I think it's such a personal experience too. You got to figure out what works for you.
Absolutely. It's definitely not a one size fits all. And, you know, what you just said made me think about one of my friends, colleagues that quoted something recently on social media where she said, self-care is not selfish. Self-care is not selfish. And I think we really have to remember that.
Yeah. In order to give, we have to take care of ourselves, keep our buckets full, like all of those analogies, all those things.
The other thing that I didn't mention before that maybe kind of leads into like the third moment that you asked me to reflect on is I have, I guess, for a long, long time, put service, community service, giving back into my life. And I get so much more from it probably than I even give. And up until January, I was the board chair for a women's leadership organization called Integrating Women Leaders. And I got to learn what it's like to support a nonprofit, how to bring kind of the concepts that I'm familiar with around diversity and inclusion into other companies and spreading that more broadly, you know, making a network of great colleagues. And that was a phenomenal experience, and a different leadership experience than what I had in corporate America, right? And then recently, I was so touched that I was asked to be the board chair, not the board chair, a board member of Joy's House, which is also a nonprofit adult daycare center here in Indianapolis that supports people and their caregivers that are experiencing life debilitating circumstances. For example, Alzheimer's, which is where my heartstrings are and where my company is focused at currently.
It's, yeah, it two things come to mind listening to you. I mean, it very much connects back to your sister Jody's recognizing, hey, you are not your job, that it is an aspect of your life and that there are lots of ways for you to get energy and there are lots of things for you to pour into. It also, the other thing that came to mind is, it is energy giving for you. So it's such a great way for you to take care of yourself, isn't it? Is by serving and giving and connecting to this organization.
You know, what we talked about as kind of a third pivotal moment was really kind of what I'm experiencing currently. My life is kind of expanding beyond my job now, because I actually feel so good that there are people that I've worked with from years ago that reach out to me for coaching and counsel and advice and mentoring. What a greater compliment than that. I mean, gosh, they feel like I really have something to offer them, and maybe I haven't worked with them in 10 years or longer. And I have an opportunity to give back. And I was blessed along my career to have people help me along the way. So I love that. I so appreciate that I can, you know, spend time helping somebody else go through something I may have gone through, or kind of sharing some HR guidance or career transitions, whatever it may be. So kind of that, and kind of what I talked about related to volunteering, fills my cup and is energy giving, as you've just said before. Actually, it's funny, my sister and I were talking about this last night when she was talking about seeing one of her best friends that moved away. And she's like, you know, every time I'm with, her name's Kathy, I feel good. She's my friend that gives such great energy. And I love that. And they've stayed friends for a long time. And I think about my close friends are the ones that give, you know, they give great energy. I give great energy back. And I think it's important to surround yourself with those people, you know, or those circumstances where you are uplifted. You know, our time is precious. So I think you're right. that makes me excited to think about that maybe more intentionally around what brings me good energy. You know, just even talking about this is making me feel excited.
Exactly. Well, hey, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for these examples. I mean, the big thing I'm walking away with across all of your stories is what works for my life, what works for me. I mean, imagine if we were just always walking around asking ourselves that. We would put ourselves in positions proactively to do our best work because we're taking care of ourselves in the process. So thank you for this reminder, Julie. If our listeners want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Probably on LinkedIn, I would say. Would that be okay?
That's great. Yeah.
You can find me. There's not many Julie Bakken studies out there.
Especially the ones that head up HR for Acumen Pharmaceuticals. You're pretty unique.
Yeah, here in Indianapolis. Uh-huh,
exactly. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode. Please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast to never miss a Being at Work story.